Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. We have an awesome episode for you today. So I just want to tell you quickly about the sponsors we're lucky enough to work with. And one of those sponsors happens to be Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F, Wake Up, Live Free Apparel. It's an up-and-coming clothing company that's making designer clothing for men, women, children, you name it. Just really nice stuff. You got to check it out. So go check out wolfnation.rocks. Go follow them on Instagram and Twitter and whatnot. And they're taking direct orders to get the company off the ground. So go check out their apparel. Order a shirt. Order a beautiful new snapback hat. They got new leggings for women. So make sure you go check them out at Wolf Nation. Wake up, live free. It is only a dream if you are not pursuing it. Now, Manskirt Brewing is an awesome microbrewery located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, in the old bank building on Main Street. Now, Manskirt is a great place to go hang out. They just put a new ceiling in. It's beautiful. But great place to go hang out, check out the murals, play some games, and, of course, sample some delicious craft beer. 8 rotating taps all the time. They got their Oktoberfest in town coming up September 28th through the 30th. I've been there before. It is a great time. They have dachshund races. It's crazy. But, yeah, they're going to be releasing 2 new beers if all goes well. Their 3rd anniversary is October 3rd. They're going to have 2 new Saisons being released, Fezzik and Inigo. Fezzik is a big boy at over 12% ABV, and Inigo comes in at 5%. So there's something for everyone at Manskirt Brewing. Go check them out. Send them some love. And, of course, go visit and get those growlers filled. Manskirt Brewing. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company that we are based out of New Jersey and in beer bars and breweries. Come on out and play trivia for free. Win prizes to those places. You do not need to be first. You could be last. You could be the stupidest people there and still win prizes. So, again, Trivia Revolution, great time. Come check it out. Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right, this was a cool one today. If you're a big Seinfeld fan, like I am, it was a show I watched basically every night before I went to bed. I still watch reruns. And I just recently read a book on Seinfeld, and it really got me into it and got me to reach out to a man by the name of Kenny Kramer. Yes, that is the inspiration for Kramer, Larry David's old neighbor. Just a really interesting guy, has a lot of interesting stories and a great interview. So have a listen to my man, Kenny Kramer. Enjoy the podcast.
Hey, everybody. This is Kenny Kramer, and you are listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. It's Scott here and Mike there, and welcome back to
your lovableness everywhere.
Yes, yes. Welcome back to another edition, another episode, another chapter in the story.
Another attempt at being funny or even somewhat amusing.
Yeah. You know, like, our Twitter handle should be VS somewhat amusing.
Yeah, with our luck, that'd be too many letters, and they'll be like DS some listen.
What was that?
It'd be something like DS some listen. We'd have to shorten it some way.
Yeah, I know. So, guys, welcome back. This is Verbal Shenanigans, a show that simply tries to entertain, I guess. We tell a lot of personal stories and quirks from the week we went through, and then we also almost always have a guest for you. So we got no one scheduled after this week, so this might be the last one.
Yep, it was a good run, Scott. I mean, the second you can't do it for 1 week, you say fuck it, it's over.
Yeah, you just dump it. That's it. We're done.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because God forbid we would have to be the entertainment for a whole episode. That would be awful.
Yeah. I mean, what was that? Episode 102 was the last time we attempted that. That did not go well.
Was it really?
It was something like that. Remember on the 200th episode, I asked the question, have we had a guest in the last 100, true or false? And you said true. And 102 was the last one I can recall.
Wow, that's impressive. Go us.
Yeah. You know what? We'll keep the show running.
Yeah,
you know,
all right.
After looking at the numbers, I approve it.
Don't worry. We will not threaten you with more of us. So, yeah. So each week we have a guest. We've had a lot of really fun guests. I don't want to get into it all the time. But just go check out our Podbean page or iTunes, and you can really see some of the guests we've had. It's funny. I look at some of the old episodes and, like, how I used to try to come up with, like, a clever name for every episode. Now I'm like, voice actor, Michael Bell. Well, I was thinking, like, if I'm searching these, right, like, I don't – if it's, like, a quirky name, I'm not really going to know what it is. But if it just tells me who it is, you know.
I don't know how, like, Google does its analytics. I mean, I guess technically if it's in the podcast description, it should show up in the Google search, but – I mean, who knows anymore? I mean,
dude, you
type in whatever.
You lied to our audience.
I did.
Yeah, episode 102 was one of our really cool guests, Maurice Ashley.
Okay, it's somewhere in the low 100s.
Don't lie to the audience.
Somewhere in the low 100s.
Don't lie to the audience.
All right.
Number
I'm
one
sorry,
rule.
Sorry, Maurice Ashley.
No. he's listening right now.
To this episode. Damn it!
He just lost to like 10 robots playing him in chess because like he he got distracted for 1 second.
Well, at least I'm remembered on Verbal Shenanigans. What the?
But yeah, so we're happy to be back, and we've had a lot of fun episodes lately. I gotta say, I really enjoyed last week too. With even the model Elizabeth Pipko and Michael Bell the week before, and two Aarons the week before that. So we've been having some fun ones lately. But anyway, check them out. So, Mike, let's get right into this. Let's get right into this.
Okay. What are we diving into?
So you've been constructing your man cave, as you call it.
The man cave has been ongoing, and I've been very happy with the construction so far. A lot of stuff has gone up. I sent in an update just today.
Yeah.
Got my Philly stuff up. A lot of my NASCAR stuff is up. I'm very happy with how it's being constructed. I even have a mace hanging on the wall.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna really break this room down.
All right.
Now, this had started a couple, like last week, kind of after the show. You had, you've been like, you know, you've been working on and getting your stuff. And now, first off, we got to call it something else. Man cave has been used. We got to call it. It's got to. We need like a really Burlew name to it.
The Burl's Bodo.
No.
No. Now you make me have to call it that.
The Burl's Mint. yeah. So we got to ditch the man cave name. We need something that's more Mike. You know, maybe we'll put a couple up on Twitter and let people vote. So it'll probably be me vote. Me voting for it, but we'll put a couple up. But man cave, it's been done. And man cave makes me think of like this poor guy who's got to go downstairs and hang in the basement, you know, while the wife gets the rest of the house. That's the connotation I think of. So
yeah, we don't want that. I mean, I'm getting married in 4 days.
So I know.
I don't want to think that.
I know. So, all right, let's get into this. All right. So I notice. I'm kind of cycling through your pictures here. We'll get into one specific picture in just a minute, and then our audience will also get to enjoy it this week.
Yes, so they should.
It looks like you have a entire NASCAR wall.
That's correct. Just from years of collecting diecasts and getting signatures, and it was just sitting in my back room not really doing anything, I decided to hang everything up. So I have a NASCAR flag hanging on the wall with signatures from some of the drivers. I have three of my NASCAR coats hanging out with signed autograph hats on top of the hooks. I have some of the smaller cars pinned up against the shelving, if you will, also to kind of display it. So let's kind of work down.
Let's break this down. Okay. So you... I've done arguably months probably of radio with you, right? I'm learning new things every week. Okay. Now I'm learning that I never knew you were such a collector of things is the first thing that kind of amazed me. Like where were all these things leading up until before? Like, did you have them in store? Like, were you waiting for this moment to display them? Did you wear the jackets?
I wore the jackets at times, yeah. Okay. In fact, at times, I don't really have, a spring jacket, if you will. So the Tide one was kind of my windbreaker that I would go out with.
Was Tide the one from Days of Thunder? Didn't he have a Tide car?
No. Tide was my driver, Ricky Rudd, and that's how I got into Ricky Rudd. It was just like, brother got me into NASCAR.
You love Tide so much.
I love the color orange.
You love the way it made your clothes smell. You were like, I really.
Screw you, cheer. I ain't going to root for that driver. Make my clothes feel all dirty inside.
I really need to support the same smell that makes my fabric so soft and so comfortable on my skin. So I'm going to cheer the driver.
I was a Tide fan for 12 years. I never knew they had a car. It was the weirdest damn thing. I'm like, oh!
I had Tide posters. I saved my Tide bottles. I have the old looks through the years of what Tide looked like in the 50s.
I never were part of the Tide Pod Challenge, though. I do not destroy beautiful
the legacy,
products of Tide
the legacy.
In my mouth. But
you have 20 different cars there. Do you ever take them out and play race car with them?
No, they would be collections. I would, if you recall my old setup before we got the furniture in the apartment in New Jersey, I had a whole shelf and I had a bunch of them there, but I also had a ton that were stored away because I didn't have a place to put them and all. But
let's take a step back to it before you got the furniture and the female in the apartment.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Don't make it seem like you got rid of them and got new furniture.
No, I will freely admit that was because the lady came in and she's like pointed at it and said, no.
That's good. That's got to go. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you got jackets, you got NASCAR thing. So now, is this going to be the center where, are you putting a TV down there to really get into your man dwelling?
There is a TV already down there. It fits the room pretty nice. We got a couch down there. It's about a good 55 incher down there. It works well with the room. We have, the usual cable. We have a Wii that we got hooked up that we are just looking to set up. So,
okay,
it will be eventually the room to, hey, Sunday afternoon, let's head down there.
All right. So now let's shift over. I noticed that you have a little bit of, what is that, Drum Hero? What's that called? Rock Band?
Rock Band. That's the Wii I was talking about. The parents actually got me a Wii just as they got it from a garage sale. And the missus loved Wii. She said, one of these days we got to find Garage or Guitar Hero. And as funny as it was, a week later, we're at a garage sale, and I just kind of nudged her, pointed over there, and we got the whole set right there. We haven't been able to play yet. We still have to hook up the Wii, but it's always a fun thing to kind of do on the side with a group.
This garage selling has gone too far. You're all in. You're going to be on, one of those shows.
No, I'm practical enough. I will say the one item for my man cave or whatever our listeners are going to call it, they regret I didn't pick up. It's only because I couldn't get away. A guy had a stand-up arcade that I was going to have. It was only $100. I was going to, if I could have got it back home, I would have got it and put it in the corner.
What game
over
was
there?
It?
Just, I think it was something baseball. It was a generic baseball game, but still, I mean, anytime somebody sees the stand-up arcade, it's like, oh, and you just run over and play.
It's got to be a good game, though. That takes up a lot of real estate in the room. So it's got to be a game that, really is wow, I want to go play. Like NBA Jam would really get it going down there. The X-Men game.
Well, the problem with those is those four-player ones, they take up a pretty good chunk of real estate. So, like, when I was growing up, I had Pac-Man, I had Frogger, and we had some kind of generic Space Invaders.
Where did you live? Heaven?
South Brunswick. I guess that's somewhat close to Heaven. I don't know.
All right. So then going to another wall, which is just an atrocious wall. It's a very big Phillies wall.
Yes.
Very big. You got newspaper clippings, I see. Is that from the World Series? I can't really tell from the picture.
Yep, those are the – I picked up a few newspapers the day after the World Series. And
hold on. I lost you.
Hello?
Oh, there you are. So you picked up a couple papers after the World Series.
And got some poster boards, and I hung them up.
Okay. So you're a bit of a collector then. I'm starting to learn this. You're a bit of a, not merchandise. What's the word I'm looking for? I guess merchandise and snippets and things. You seem to have a lot of stuff here. You have a Phillies
amount.
Monopoly. You have a Philly scarf. Do you wear that around the house when you're cold?
No, that was actually a Christmas gift that didn't get into use yet, so it looked like a good...
We need to play a little game here where, like, you have to do things in these... Like, you have to have sex with just a Philly scarf on. Like, you get, points. Like, almost like our showdown, but, like, you have to do things with funny objects in the room. Like, you have to wear the Tide coat... And just a Tide coat around the house while cooking a meal for Izzy one day. Like, just to see the reactions you get and if you can pull off, like, the goal. Maybe we should do, like, so the Philly scarf, different levels. Like, level one would be wearing the shorts and the scarf outside while mowing the lawn. Level two would be, like... laying on the couch with just a scarf on when Izzy comes home from work to see what happens. Level three would be like, could you complete the deed with the scarf on?
I got you. I'm intrigued.
You see what I'm thinking here? Like, like these funny objects, we can do funny games with them. No, I'm not much of a collector anymore. I would say the only thing I've been getting recently is just, like, vinyl. I've been picking up, like, some vinyl every once in a while, like a record.
Okay.
But I realized when I moved twice, which is now four times over the last couple of years, that I don't want any stuff anymore. Like, I'm done with stuff because, like, it accumulates. But I did have my bar. You remember my old bar set up downstairs. Where we tried to do the old radio show. Okay, so you got your Phillies wall. Is that Lenny Dykstra in the middle?
Yes, it is. That's the one I got for the Shenanigans Showdown.
Well, you should definitely accompany that with, like, a button that people can go press and hear some sound clips from the interview. You got to get a little bit more creative in the Burlew Cave or whatever we're going to call it.
Okay. I hear you.
All right, and I see going down the stairs is a nice Verbal Shenanigans poster from...
Yep, the original.
The original one, me, you, Watson, and Chips Cooney.
Correct.
All right, now there's a... You have a weapon of death in your little man room there that you...
That is correct.
I think it's just your masturbation room, I'm not going to lie. But you have a... you have a mace.
Yes, I do.
Not just
yes,
a mace, it's like a double... Like two balls on the end of it.
Yeah, it's two balls. It's real metal. It's spiked. It's heavy. And it's hanging on my wall.
No.
Yard sale for $8.
Okay. Now, one, knowing you pretty well and your exceptional coordination, please don't use this mace. Please.
No, it's for decoration.
Like, I don't want to see, like, be like, dude, I can't podcast this week. And then we video chat and, like, half your face... It is just mauled.
I thought I could juggle, John. It didn't work out too well.
I was playing Viking in the basement, and I mashed my eye
in.
I was
just wearing my Philly scarf, so that counted points.
I was wearing my Philly scarf and my mace, and things got a little out of hand.
Yeah. Izzy didn't find it sexy.
I spent three nights in the hospital. what is the intrigue to this mace? You just needed a doom weapon in there?
I was just going around yard sailing. Guy had a bunch of swords and the mace, and I just kind of looked at him like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but this looks cool. So I bargained him down. And
how much did he want for said mace?
He wanted 10. He got it for 8.
Sick. You killed it.
Yeah. Well, that's what you do at yard sailing. You try to bargain it down.
I don't know about this yard sailing. I don't know. I feel like you're going to be like, I'm going to be watching like Pawn Stars or like American Pickers one day. I'm going to see you there. Like, with your man cave room just full of crap, and you're like, yeah, I could get rid of some stuff, and you got to like go underneath.
But
like,
I don't need to.
Be like, how much for the Phillies Monopoly? And you're going to be like, I don't know where it is, and go under like all these things. Like, you got to take it easy.
Yeah, even as I bought it, someone was like, what the hell are you going to do with that? I'm like, you hear about some idiot in the newspaper, you figured out what it did. But
you should have just threatened her.
Don't talk to Laura that way.
What do you think I'm going to do with it?
I don't know.
I suggest you start running.
Yeah.
Now,
but I got it because if you see on the other side, the man law rules, kind of a cute little wooden sign that Izzy picked up for me. I said, you know, this would be kind of cool. Just hang that up and say, you know, violators will be prosecuted, and have the mace right under the sign.
Okay. The mace is fine. I'm okay with the mace. The Phillies wall, I mean, I get it, unfortunately. But now, you got Redskin stuff, too. We get that. Now, there's a sign. I can't find the picture now. But there was a sign that had a little dog on it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's a chalkboard.
You got some explaining to do on that one.
Yep. The girl at some point picked up that chalkboard. It's more importantly, because I kept on, we're in Jersey, I said, you know, we need something to write notes on it for each other, for any kind of occasion, like, all right, remember next Saturday we're doing this or that or whatever. And the funny thing was, she would keep on getting like chalkboards, which we couldn't use, which were like very small and decorations and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So for Christmas, she got like that one that says the Burrows on it, and it has a dog on it. And then we didn't know what we would do with it. And then we said, okay, we'll write the note, violators will be prosecuted, and have hang the mace under it. Makes complete sense.
Now, it's not very threatening. First off, it has a name that nobody calls you. And two, it's got a big, whatever, like, fat, cartoony dog on it.
Yeah, but the mace...
The dog reminds me of my dog a little bit. It's kind of frumpy.
A little obvious, yeah. I would say that.
Yeah. Now, you have a horror wall, which I get. You got a horror wall with some...
Mm-hmm.
Some. Now, why so much XFL merchandise?
I just happen to have it. The football I got as a Christmas gift. It is signed by most of the WWE wrestlers at the time. So Stone Cold, Steve Austin,
really?
Undertaker, all those. I always held on to that. The mini one, I don't know where I got that. I just came across that.
You didn't get that in tryouts?
No, I did not. Oh. The Memphis Maniacs, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, what we're going to get into next, I had assumed that you were pretty much on the brink of making the team.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second. But the program is actually from the first XFL game in New York with the New York, New Jersey Hitmen. So that's why I have that stuff.
Okay, I see Beavis and Butthead.
Yep, I got that a long time ago, just hung on to it, and just looked nice hanging up there.
Now, there's one picture you had sent me that I can't really tell what it is. It's like there's like elephants and then like these little things in boxes. One looks like the Taj Mahal.
Oh, that's when I did one week and a half in India.
Ah,
and that's some of
the
stuff
dead
I
bodies.
Picked up in India. Yep, that's where we.
Now, if you had brought a body home and put it on the horror wall with the mace, That's
that might have worked.
That's thinking outside the box.
It took a while, and it's really weird to get that stuff through customs, but I mean, I guess it could have worked in the end, but I just didn't have enough room for
my
the
point
flight.
Is you're just not trying hard enough. You're just not being...
Well,
you're
the
not,
next time I go to another country and see a dead body, I will bring it back for you. Are you happy?
Just produce a dead body. Just make one.
I just don't feel like it, Scott. I mean, not for the podcast, at least. I'm going to need at least, like, 100 points in the shenanigans showdown for that.
All right, let's get into my favorite part of the whole man cave.
I wonder what that could be.
You had sent me this picture that is level 10 amazing. Okay.
Okay.
Let's break it down. Now, we got to really visually, like verbally break this down for the people listening so they can get an idea of it before we get to our guest here. So, it is a picture of a, like, it's a picture of Berlew.
Somewhere in the 8 to 12 years old range.
I was going
to
say, you could be mysteriously any age in this photo. You almost look like an old man, but you also look like a little kid.
Yeah.
So let's break it down. So the top says the NFL playoffs review in Sport Magazine in the biggest font we can possibly find.
Now, Sport was an actual magazine.
Oh, so they were scouting you is what you were saying.
No, that's not from the real magazine, but we'll get into that story after you describe the picture.
Now, the picture. On the left, there's a couple really fun headlines, okay? Berlew graces the cover of the magazine. Underneath, his name is Football's MVP, Mike. So you're the MVP of football.
In that photo, I was representing that, correct.
Okay. The red hot Western Division. It was a tough division that year. Apparently you were playing in the West.
No, I was playing for the Redskins. You got to remember, this is a cover of a magazine, and those are the side stories. I'm the MVP. I'm the lead story, but those are the side stories, which is talking about the Red Hot West Division.
Oh, well, it also says this year's candidates for the Heisman Trophy. I assume by this face that you had won that the year prior.
It's a possibility. I did really good in college, got drafted by the Redskins. I'm wearing my number 7 uniform right there.
America's fastest growing indoor sport, and plus a Super Bowl preview in a special issue. Okay. So all these things. So it's a big issue, a sports magazine. Now, on the cover, okay, is you in, like, Jeffrey Dahmer Coke bottle glasses, big glasses.
Yep.
You have a football on your shoulder in a very natural football pose. I believe they would say that's a football move in under review. Yep. You have a Redskins shirt or jersey on. You have a helmet, and you are making this face of I can't tell if you're trying to be tough. I can't tell if you're laughing. I can't tell if you're constipated and you also look like you almost have red hair. Which I found interesting. You almost look like you almost look a little ginger. You look like one of me.
Well, at that age, when I was younger, I had like platinum blonde, and then slowly grew into dirty blonde, into pretty much brunette what I am today. So that was...
You
I
almost
think,
have like
lighting.
A Napoleon Dynamite vibe going on. In fact, we were texting back and forth, and I put your pictures back and forth, and it was pretty good. We could also post that.
Pretty spot on. Yeah. I will have to admit that. You will have to share out the site.
Yeah, when this episode comes up, we will definitely put them up and get people's reactions. But what was going on in this picture before we get to our guest? It is a level 10 fantastic picture, and that's the kind of stuff I like in your burr loser cave, whatever we call it.
Okay, so the synopsis is my dad took me to Busch Gardens, I think North Carolina. I forget if it's Virginia or North Carolina.
Yeah, Virginia.
Yeah, so took me there to go on the rides and stuff, and they had like a photo booth thing there where they do like different magazine covers. So like girls, you could have done like People magazine, you could have done Cosmopolitan.
Cosmo would have looked good with this face right here.
so I So as a kid, I'm like, oh, I want to do it. No, I want to, because they have all the dress up and whatever. So I wanted to, big Redskins fan growing up, I wanted to dress up like a Redskin. I had the number 7 Joe Theismann jersey right
you
there.
You should have put on a headdress and painted your body.
The team,
the Redskins, got it.
The team, yeah. So Sport Magazine actually was a magazine back in that day. I guess they had rights, or this is pre, oh, you could actually want money for this kind of deal. So they were actual magazine titles on there. So I get the dress up, and the girl gets me all set. She's the one that said to hold the football like that, and she wanted me to smile. Yeah, kind
of
like that.
Now, for those of you who are just listening audio, he's holding the football not like under his arm, not in a catching position, more like a, like, on his
really
shoulder,
trying
in between
to
his,
shove it into my shoulder blade.
Yeah, like between your bicep and your neck. Very, very, yeah. Like he's flexing, put a football on top of his bicep.
Yeah. So she positioned me like that, and she wanted me to smile. And my dad was like, no, he's a football player. He should be angry.
Yes.
So that's my mean face that I'm giving there. Like,
oh.
That's my intimidating football face right there.
It's really working, pal.
Yeah.
I mean, this picture is like something out of the cast of like Little Giants. Like, you would be perfect. Like, it just reminds me of a character of like those kind of movies, like those 90s movies. Like you should have like
the one with asthma.
yeah. Yeah, the one who hates bees and if he gets stung, gets all swollen up and scores a touchdown because he's running from bees or something like that.
All right, Mike, hold the football. What are you doing? That's not how you hold a football, Mike.
Yeah, and you running down the field with the ball in your bicep. Like, that's what this reminds me of. This is my favorite picture today. And we've had some great pictures over the years. This is definitely, like, I'm looking at it now, and there's, like, a slight smile on my face because it brings me so much joy. Your face, it just makes it all. All the cheesy things, I remember those things, like the baseball magazines. You'd hold, you know, you'd take pictures in Little League and stuff, but your intense face, literally, like, I kind of want to print this out and hang it up in my house.
Let me grade the next podcast. I just see my picture in the background.
Well, it's funny. It's like I told Alex whenever we move, you know, to a bigger place again, that I want to like do an office kind of with like a whole bunch of like Verbal Shenanigans stuff, like a lot of the people we interviewed, make it more of like a studio feel. This might make that cut, that's for sure. This might bring me into
it.
I feel honored. Well, I mean, you got your man kingdom, and your girl has her lady cave. Like, you should start stealing things from her cave and putting them in yours and play a little game and see if she notices.
Little contest.
Exactly.
If you will. Yeah.
Put like a Mickey in a Redskins helmet, like kind of in the corner, and see what happens. So I think you should work on that this week and get our reactions for next week's show.
Well, I'm kind of getting married this week, so that might not fit my schedule, Scott.
Well, you know, that's the time to steal. She'll be distracted.
Yeah, but I kind of got to do stuff for this since it's actually in my house.
So. Yeah. Well, keep it in mind. Steal something.
Okay.
But
wedding dress is hiding right here. I can do that.
All right. So before we, we'll get to your wedding window. I think it's guest time. We kind of went for a little while here. So let's get to our guest for the night.
Happened again.
So I guess since we're good segue, I guess that I can find in this would be like, since we're talking about nostalgic things. Last week, well, funny because last week we talked that Seinfeld had actually come up in conversation because I had read that book, Seinfeldia, which is a bad name for a book, but definitely a really good book. If anybody likes to read books out there and like Seinfeld, it's just kind of like, you know, like an overall arc of Seinfeld, like how it happened, what was going on, some of the actors, some of the things that happened. And in the book, they were talking about the inspiration for characters. And obviously, if you don't know who Kramer is, I'm sorry. You're not going to like this episode. But there was an inspiration for Kramer, which is Larry David's neighbor by the name of Kenny Kramer. And they were talking all about him in the book, so I decided to try to reach out to him, and we actually have Kenny Kramer coming on the show right now. I was a big, gigantic fan of Seinfeld, still am. Actually, after the book, kind of went back and just been watching some episodes again just to, I don't know, see things that they were talking about in the book to kind of pick it up. Now I want to start Kirby. I've never got into Curb Your Enthusiasm because I never had HBO back in the day. So now I kind of want to start that. Do you watch that?
I can't say I had. The few times I happened to be over somebody's house which had it on, it was hilarious. I mean, Larry David is really good in his writing, and I mean, it kind of shows, because like you say, Seinfeld, you can go back and say, all right, I could just watch this. So there's not, oh, that was funny in the 80s, or you have to explain a certain thing that happened at that time frame. It was just generally good written funny.
Right. For that. Were you a big Seinfeld guy? I was huge.
I got into it. I probably got into it around the third or fourth season.
That's where everyone says they hit their stride. Everyone says the fourth season's like where it really turned into Seinfeld. Like, and if you watch like the early ones, the first, second season, they're not like the same as the fourth and on, where the characters are really like insane.
Yeah, and where they really develop the story and just say, okay, this world is on its own, let's just let it ride.
Yeah. All right, so let's get Kenny Kramer on the line. I'm pretty excited to hear how this all went down. So, Kenny Kramer.
Hello there.
Hey. Let me just...
okay, this is better.
Great.
Okay.
Let me just merge Mike in real quick. Mike, you there?
Where is Mike?
I am here.
There is Mike. Mike is in the sweet state of Georgia, and I'm in New Jersey.
Okay.
Where are you located?
Where in Georgia are you, Mike?
What's that?
Where in Georgia are you?
I live in Douglasville. It's about half an hour northwest of Atlanta.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
You?
So, Kenny, first off, I want to thank you just for giving us a couple minutes of your time. We really appreciate it. I was saying just before we called you, I had read over vacation last week. I had read the book Seinfeldia, and it was going, you know, all into whatever the history of Seinfeld and everything. And
yeah, I know the book. I know the author is a friend of mine.
Yeah, it was a great book, and it really got into it got into your character a whole lot and some things about you. And I said, this guy sounds pretty fascinating, not just because your influence on the show, but just also some of the other things you have done. But I guess where to start with you, before any of this happened with Larry and whatnot, I know that you were doing stand-up comedy and different things. What were you doing before any of this, before you ever met Larry?
I was stand-up. I was doing stand-up. Let's see, I started in like 71. And I met Larry in 77. So I had already had, like, you know, about 5 or 6 years under my belt as a stand-up. And I was just working, plodding away, you know. It was before the advent of the big comedy boom of the 80s.
Yep.
And so I was, you know, there were probably at the time maybe 5 comedy clubs in America. And, you know, I was working in Miami Beach at a lot of hotels, gigs like that, cruise ships and stuff like that. And, I was, you know, making a living, which, you know, just using my sense of humor and the fact that stand-up comedy is a lot better than having to work.
I agree. That's my goal in life. But so you were doing stand-up, but you said there was so little. So you were able to make a living just doing stand-up. And also, what was your act like back then? Were you more of a physical comic? Were you an observational comic?
When I started out, I was I was entertaining much older audiences. I had started up in the New York area where I had an agent named King Broder who had all of these Italian clubs. And I was playing those clubs. And they were all mostly older people. And when I moved to Florida, I was playing the beach where the people, you know, the audience were like, you know, somewhere between 60 and deceased. And I was like, yeah, I was doing very good. I was, you know, making a living. But I realized that if I wanted to do this for a whole lifetime as a career, and this was my audience, people in their 60s and 70s, and I'm now like in my late 20s, I'm thinking, you know, by the time I'm peaking, this audience is dead. So I realized that I really, you know, should be entertaining my peers, not entertaining older people. And so I switched my whole act around and became all dope sex and rock and roll, you know, with tons of dope jokes and Quaalude jokes and all that kind of stuff. And then I started, I hooked up with an agent in New York, a big-time agent, through an ex-girlfriend. She was dating him, and he was a real character, but he controlled Rod Stewart and Faces and Uriah Heep to Grab Central Station. He was a big-time agent, and I became his comic, you know, and I spent a couple of years just opening, you know, all these major acts pretty much on the road. And that's what I was doing. You know, I was opening for, like, Kiss and Grand Central Station and Brian Auger and, you know, all these rock and roll bands that had hit records at the time. Average White Band, I was with them for a while.
Nice.
And it was a lot of fun. I got to be a rock and roll star, you know, you know, which was, you know, a pretty decadent way of life. But then, like, in let's see, I guess it was 1975 or 6. And all of a sudden, my ex-wife, who was an alcoholic, couldn't take care of our child. And I, you know, got full-time custody of this little 5-year-old girl. And I could no longer afford to, you know, I couldn't go out on the road anymore like that. And I had to, like, you know, establish a home and, you know, see to it that I was there every morning to tie her shoelaces and take her to school and pick her up after school. And so it changed my whole, you know, and it probably saved my life because, I mean, you know, being on that rock circuit was so decadent that I probably could have been dead quite easily with all the partying we were doing. And then once I got custody of Melanie, it was like I had to really settle down and become like an adult.
Yeah.
Which I did. And, you know, I ended up moving into New York, and I met Larry David, and we became friends. And then Larry, we lived in the same building, and then and he moved to L.A. to do a show called Fridays. He gave up his apartment, and after Fridays was canceled, he wanted to come back to New York, and I finagled for him to get the apartment across the hall from me. And he lived there about 5.5 years, and you know, many of the things that happened in our lives during that period of time ended up as storylines on Seinfeld. And, you know, at the time I didn't realize he was taking notes, but he always saw me as a character. And he went ahead and he created the character Kramer. I mean, Michael Richards created the character as much as Larry did also, you know, because, you know, Larry knows me like a book, so the golf, the entrepreneurism, the hot tubs, all that stuff is about me. But, of course, Michael is a physical comedian. Like, if I would have played Kramer, this show could have gone right down the tubes. Because I would have never thought to, like, you know, enter the room by jerking, you know, doing all that stuff that he does. You know, and that ingredient of the character Kramer really made the show accessible to, you know, a lot of people that didn't get all the jokes, but they knew when Kramer was bouncing off the walls, that was funny.
Oh.
And that's what happened.
So
I'm sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say, you talked about your comedy career and meeting Larry, and I, reading up on you, I've seen a lot of side stuff, how you managed a reggae band, and you were trying to be a manager for a karate champion. You feel you kind of got into that sport a little late, karate, you know, thinking if it was a couple years later, you might have been one of the pioneers in, like, UFC like that?
No. Thank you. Not at all. No, what happened was my daughter, when she was, like, around 13 or 14, she decided she wanted to be a model. And she was very beautiful, but the problem was she was only like 5'5", you know. And to have a modeling career, you needed to be like about 6 feet tall at the time. Well, her mother is 5'11", and her mother was saying that you know, from the time she was like 13 to the time she was 17, she grew 6 inches, you know. So we kept waiting for Melanie to shoot up, you know. she was going to shoot up, you know. So I said to her, look, I'll support your modeling career. I'll help you do everything I can for you, but I just want to feel comfortable that when you're out there with your little mini skirt carrying a portfolio that you'd be safe. So I want you to start studying self-defense so that if anything like, you know, threatening happens to you, you know how to handle it. So she agreed that, you know, she would do this. And it turned out I put her in her first karate school, and it turns out she actually loved martial arts, you know, and she got really into it. And the next thing I know, she's like a competitor, and she's like in the top 10 nationally in fighting forms and self-defense and flying all over the country doing tournaments and exhibitions and stuff like that. And so by my being with her, and I was always getting her the best teachers, one of the most talented fighters in the karate scene in that era was a guy named Bill Beeson. And I always surrounded her by like really the top people, and Bill was just a great guy, but also just a monster fighter, and he became her fighting coach, and then I always started managing him, you know, just arranging fights for him and stuff like that. The problem was there was no money in it at the time. You know, this is long before martial arts started merging with cage fighting, and that hadn't happened yet. This was like the karate tournaments all over the country, but it was mostly point karate, you know, or taekwondo. And so I had wished to God that she would have gotten interested in tennis or golf, where you could really make a living.
Yeah.
But anyway, so she spent 5 years and, you know, rose to, like, you know, be one of the top female fighters in the country in her style. And, so Bill, you know, I was helping him out, like, you know, negotiating fights for him and things like that. And I started studying, you know, because, you know, we reached a point, like, you know, when she was, like, about 15 or 16, without question, she could kick my ass. So I figured I better learn how to protect myself.
From her?
From her. So I started to study. I got as far as, like, a brown belt. You know, she was a black belt at the time. And it was great in our relationship because she was my senior, you know. I would have to bow to her, and she... we had a great relationship.
I mean, that sounds like a storyline in the show. You know, Kramer, he learned karate.
Well, actually, there was an episode where Kramer is studying karate, if you remember.
Yep.
I do remember that. About that. Yeah.
So what was it?
I convinced Larry to take a couple of classes with us, but it was just too hard for him, you know.
God, Larry David crazy. Doing karate is a great image in my head.
Well, he was an early dropout.
Well, let's talk about Larry for a second and a relationship, your relationship with him. What was your relationship like, not even during the show, but prior to the show? Was it hanging out like all the time? Were you guys hitting comedy clubs at night?
Well, we lived across the hall from each other for about 5.5 years, and we lived like roommates. You know, our doors were always open. We go in and out of each other's apartments all the time, and you know, we'd have dinner maybe between two or three nights a week. We'd eat together, we were just really good friends. You know, we were both big Yankee fans. And, you know, the first year we lived in the building in Manhattan Plaza was the Yankees won a World Series, and you know, we watched a lot of games together, went to the ticker tape parade down Broadway when the Yankees win a series. It was, you know, we had that in common. And you know, our personalities were so different, but yet, you know, we sort of, our personalities really complemented each other, whereas, like, he was shy and subdued. I was, like, outgoing and ready to party. And it worked into a great friendship.
So is that thing that was both on Seinfeld and in the book about, I think it was him eating the food and leaving receipts or one, or you, which one was it?
Yeah. Right, yeah, you know. you know, the characterization of Kramer on the show is the guy who's always barging into your house at inopportune moments to grub things, right? Well, yeah. In real life, it was quite the opposite. You know, I'm a single parent, a little kid, and I saw to it that I always, my refrigerator was always stocked. You know, there were at least three, four different flavors of ice cream and fresh fruit and snacks and cookies. And Larry, you know, Larry's the kind of guy, he's very sensitive, like, God forbid anyone should ever think that he's taking advantage of them. He couldn't live with himself. So to this end, he insisted he had to pay for every morsel of food he ever ate in my house. I said, Larry, it's my pleasure to feed my friends. You know, just help yourself. It makes me feel good. You know, he says, Kramer, he says, no, that doesn't work. He says, because if I take food and I'm not paying for it, then I'm not going to be comfortable taking it. So let me just do what I have to do here, and then I can feel comfortable whenever I go into your refrigerator. I said, okay, so that's what he did. He had an index card with a refrigerator magnet on my refrigerator door, and if he came in, you know, because his refrigerator had nothing in it. I mean, it was a half a tuna fish sandwich from 3 weeks ago that was growing penicillin or something. And so everything he ate was either pick up a phone and order in, or go out to a restaurant, or go across the hall to Kramer's. And so anytime he took something, like if he took two Malamar cookies and a half a glass of milk, he'd have to estimate how many Malamars were in the package for how much. Well, okay. So there's like 12 cents a cookie. That's 24 cents for two, half a glass of milk, another 30 cents. Okay,
I love it.
And he'd have like this little nickel and dime list on my refrigerator door. And this went on for like 5.5 years. So when the show first goes on the air, he calls and asks me, you know, you got me some ideas of things that, you know, happen that might make good storylines. And I gave him a number of suggestions. One of them was, remember that list you used to keep on my refrigerator door? It was, oh, that's a good one, Craig. I never said another thing about it, but I guess it was about 5 seasons later, Kramer's keeping a list on Jerry's refrigerator.
Yep. One of my favorite episodes.
Jerry, I put that on the list. I took a half a can of Coke. There's no half a Coke can of Coke. You open Coke, you own the whole can. That's how Coke works.
So I'm curious, how did he present it to you when that he was going to make a show with your character in it? Did he really say, hey, I'm going to Hollywood, or did you
the way he presented it? The way he presented it was exactly the way it happened in the episode called The Pilot, where he came in one day and said, I'm writing this this pilot with Jerry, and I want to base a character on you called Kramer. Is that okay with you? And I said, of course it's okay with me, as long as I get to play Kramer. And he says, you can't play Kramer. And I said, but I am Kramer. And that, of course, conversation, word for word, happened in an episode of Seinfeld. But, of course, Larry at the time says, listen, Kramer, I have no say who's going to play Kramer. I'm just writing this pilot with Jerry. It may not even go to camera to ever even become a pilot. And if it does become a pilot, they're going to hire a California actor that has television credits. You have no chance. And I have no say in it. So I said, okay, I understand. So, you know, you be my guest, do whatever you want to do. And he created this character. And, of course, Michael is the one that added all the magic ingredients of physical comedy. And then the show flew.
So what are your thoughts during that? Like, at the beginning, are you just like, yeah, whatever, make a character off of me? There's probably, and it, from the book, and just Larry, it seems like Larry was like, yeah, it's probably never going to happen. So what are your thoughts when that actually does take off? Okay, there's a season, there's a pilot, a season, a second season. Are you kind of like blown away? Are you involved in this at all? Are you watching from afar? What is your thoughts during this time period?
Well, of course, I was rooting for Larry to, you know, have a hit show. I never thought that network television was his medium. I knew his sense of humor was like really very special, but I didn't think it would really translate to Middle America, and you know, and that they would allow him to do what he does, you know, where he goes with his comedy. I didn't really ever think that the network would ever allow that to happen. But, you know, what happened was, I don't know if that's in the, what's her name, Joanne's book. What's her name, Joanne Armstrong?
I have the book in over there. Hold on.
We were very friendly. Jennifer Armstrong.
Jennifer Armstrong.
All right. Yeah, I don't know if it was in her book, but there was a vice president in charge of late night comedy and late night programming, a guy named Rick Ludwin, who fought for Seinfeld. He championed the show, and he alone saved that show.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happened was when they made the pilot, and they didn't even understand it or anything, but they wanted, it was the first television show from a company called Castle Rock Entertainment, which was owned by Rob Reiner. And NBC wanted to have really good terms with Rob Reiner because they had a show called Movie of the Week, and Rob Reiner had all these movies that had never been on broadcast television, Stand By Me. Stand By Me. Kathy Bates won the Academy Award for Best Actress in a Rob Reiner film called Misery. Spinal Tap was another one.
Hmm.
And so when they made the pilot, NBC said, well, you know, it's not really, we don't really understand it, but we'll give you guys a shot to make 4 test episodes. But they got to put a woman in the cast because there's no Elaine in the pilot episode.
Mm-hmm.
So Larry created this character. Elaine is a platonic ex-girlfriend. Who, you know, she's one of the boys, but she's a babe, you know. And they made the 4 test episodes, the stock tip mail unbonding, the stakeout, and the robbery. All 4 of those episodes were based on real things that happened. So anyway, they make the 4 test episodes, and they show it over the summer. And then NBC decides that let's make it a replacement for the midseason, and they order 13 more episodes. I think it was 13. And they put it in the time slot opposite Home Improvement. And at the time, of course, Home Improvement was one of the top comedy shows on television. And, it languished, the share that it was getting of the audience was, very small. And Brandon Tartikoff, who at the time was the head of NBC, decided, he's going to cancel the show. But in the meantime, the show's getting a real cult following and getting great reviews. You know, reviewers are just loving this show. It's quirky. It's esoteric. And so Tartikoff was saying, yeah, but we're not getting any ratings here. We can't afford to have this, And Rick Ludwin was saying, look, can't we just work with this show? Can't we keep this show? Can't we have one show because it has quality, not because it's getting great numbers, but because it's really a fine piece of work? So he fought for them to, be able to stay on for another season. And then what happened was just a fluke. The stars he lined, just lined up for Seinfeld. Because what happened was Ted Danson, who had a show called Cheers, as everyone knows, which was at the time one of the top 10 shows on television. And he had a deal with NBC that his production company, which owned Cheers, also had the rights to the slot that follows Cheers, which was a show that his company was producing called Wings.
Mm-hmm.
And when he decided to quit Cheers, then he lost the right to have that slot for Wings, and they threw Seinfeld in there to see just what kind of erosion Seinfeld would make. In other words, if Cheers was getting a 35 share, and they put Seinfeld there, and it kept a 30 share, they only lost a few points of the share audience. That's what they were looking for. But what happened was the Cheers audience, which was a pretty sophisticated audience, discovered Seinfeld. And within a few weeks, Seinfeld was getting better ratings than Cheers. And, of course, the NBC suits. Well, you see, we always knew this was a great show.
Of course.
And then, then Seinfeld just took off, in the second, third season. And by that time, Larry had, created this formula that hadn't really been done before. We had 4 storylines. There'd be a Jerry story, a Lane story, a Kramer story, a George story, all running simultaneously. They intersected a couple of strategic points and then come together at the end. You know, that was a formula that Larry created, and he didn't get it down until like about the third season or the fourth. The fourth season, he calls that his White Album. You know, the.
Yeah, we were just saying once, right before you came on, that that's like the season, you know, like that's the season things took off and the characters really turned.
With the contest. Yeah.
Yeah. And the characters turned into, like, I feel like the characters, like, that we know, that, you know, the George became George and, you know, Lane became Elaine. Like, it really, where we bought into these characters and they were, like, allowed to kind of just go anywhere after that. Like, we'd follow them.
Yeah, well. You know, the network let them do whatever they want. They didn't interfere, you know. And, you know, like they got a show on NBC. Just think about this. NBC primetime, 9 p.m. on national television. The story is about four friends who decide who could go the longest without masturbating. Think about it. In the annals of television history, we're like maybe 15 years before that, Bob and Laura Petrie had to sleep in twin beds. They weren't even allowed to sleep in the same bed. And then you have the masturbation episode where they never used the word. And
master, you know, of your domain.
The fact that it was hilariously funny, aside from the fact that it was groundbreaking in having a major network allow that subject, that topic, and those jokes to go on the air. It was astounding. And yet, you know, it was so funny, it couldn't be denied. I think that's in the Hall of Fame of broadcasting.
Yeah. So let me ask you, when the vibe is going out there and when you're just like in a coffee shop and you can hear people talking about the last episode of Seinfeld, do you readily just tell people, you know, that character is based off of me?
No.
And if
I wouldn't do that.
Do they believe you?
No, I wouldn't do that. I mean, First of all, enough people know at this point, I've had so much publicity that about every Seinfeld fan knows there's a real Kramer and he runs these tours in New York, you know, for Seinfeld fans, which after 22 years is still going strong. You know, if any of you listeners who are Seinfeld fans, you know, every Saturday, about 6 months a year, I do the Kramer reality tour, which of course was spoofed at an episode of Seinfeld. The Peterman reality tour. But it's a real tour and it's a lot of fun. Everybody has a great time. It's been going on, as I say, for 22 seasons. Excuse me. And you know, if you just go to KennyKramer.com, you can read all about it, and, you know, and see links and stuff like that. But no, I don't really go out of my way to like force myself on people, you know. But you know, I you know, I created a brand for myself with the baseball hat backwards and my hair sticking out of the sides. And you know, if I walk around the streets looking like that, you know, my branded identity, people recognize me all the time. But if I tuck my hair into my hat and just go straight ahead, just occasionally people would stop me or, hey, Kramer, I went on your tour. Well, I voted for you when I ran for mayor. That's when I got the yes. Oh, you know, I voted for you. If all the people that told me they voted for me actually voted for me, I would have been the mayor of New York.
Well, that's actually literally what I wanted to get into next. Like, you're talking about identity and whatnot. You know, you did get a ton of publicity, you know, like people are still reaching out to you, obviously us, you know, and you still did a lot of other things. You had the tour that you said 22 years, which is crazy that that's still made, but you did run for mayor. So
twice.
You know, besides the tour, you know, I have a stage version of the tour. It's called Kramer on Seinfeld, and there's a website called KramerOnSeinfeld.com, which is like the stand-up portion of the way the tour works is I do an hour of stand-up telling stories of things that happened in real life, how they became episodes, and then everybody gets on a bus with me, and we take them to soup, and it's a lot of fun. But my stage show, it's like the theater stand-up plus about another 30, 40 minutes of it with a lot more stories. It's a lot of fun. In fact, if any of your listeners book theaters, colleges, corporate events, that's something that I do.
It's awesome.
I travel and do Kramer on Seinfeld. So, you know, it's a lot of fun, you know.
But you got to tell us about your run for mayor. How did that come about?
Well, my first run for mayor was an aborted run for mayor. I was going to run in the Democratic primary as mayor. And you know, I wrote a press release and sent it over to the Daily News, and they put it in the day book. And then, you know, and then I announced Kramer's running for mayor, and like, I got some publicity from it. And then when I realized how much actual work was involved, and you know, I sort of dropped out. I was going to run for Democratic primary. So, you know, so that was a dud, you know. A few years later, a friend of mine, Gary Brownrodden, who's at the time he was the manager of CNN Radio, that did like thousands of radio stations across the country would buy like the news breaks from CNN, and he was the producer of that. And so I had a gig on a New Year's Eve, and Gary comes up and says, "Hey, Crane." He says, "Can I get a quick soundbite with you?" So I said, "Sure." So he says, "Well, you know, we're coming into the political season again. Any thoughts about running for mayor?" I said, "Well, I'll be honest with you. If Jesse Ventura could become the governor of a state, why the hell can't I be the mayor of New York?" So he makes that into like, you know, a 30-second clip that runs on thousands of radio stations in heavy rotation day and night for, you know, for the whole news cycle. Like 24 hours or 36 hours. And it just so happens that the president of the New York Libertarian Party lives in the Bronx, hears this little clip, you know, of me talking about running for mayor, and he calls me up and he says, "Listen, would you be interested in being the Libertarian Party's candidate?" I said, "Well, I don't know much about the Libertarian Party." He says, "Well, go to our website and read all about it. Let me know what your thoughts are." So I read all this information about libertarianism, which I agree with like 90% of it, but some of it was a little, you know, a little out there for me. Like, the world would be a better place if everybody has a gun.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one either.
Yeah, you know, there were a couple of things that, you know, my feeling of the right to bear arms is like wearing short sleeve shirts. So I called him. I said, "Listen, you know, I agree with, you know, the freedoms and all the things that you espouse, but you know, the Second Amendment position that you have is not for me, to be honest with you." He says, "Well, look, if you wanted to be our candidate, you don't have to like run on anything that you don't feel comfortable with, you know. If you're uncomfortable with that, forget it. That just won't be part of your platform." So I had to go to the New York convention to be nominated to be the candidate for mayor. So I go there, and all the delegates had a choice of voting for Kenny Kramer or none of the above. That's one of the options that they presented to their membership. Yeah. Well, the choice was Kenny Kramer or none of the above, and I prevailed. I won.
You know? Woo!
And I became the Libertarian Party's candidate for mayor. It was a real political party that had money and everything, you know. And as it happens, a writer from the Associated Press that I became friendly with at the time, Larry McShane, he came to the convention and wrote an article about Kramer running for mayor, and it went on the AP wire. And because Seinfeld's a hit like in 90 countries, when anything about me goes on the Associated Press wire, it goes to what they call the international split. So every newspaper, every newsroom throughout the world is getting this. So Kramer is, the real Kramer is running for mayor of New York. And, you know, people would ask me, "Well, is this a publicity stunt?" I said, "Well, look, I'll be honest with you. The last time I ran for mayor, it was a publicity stunt. But this time, I'm not kidding." That was my slogan. "This time, I'm not kidding." And, I got together an organization of people. Libertarian Party gave me some money, not a lot, but, and then we were raising funds, and, you know, I had this very funny fundraising letter. It turns out the Libertarian Party will, like, sell you their mailing lists. You know, that's something like 50 cents an address. You know, they print out these labels for you. So I bought all the Libertarian members of New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut, you know, and this little area to, like, you know, raise money. And I had this very funny fundraising letter. It was supposed to go out. And then it was going out on the Thursday of that week in September. And the Tuesday of that week in September was 9/11, which took a lot of wind out of my sails, you know, whereas, you know, I'm asking people for money for this silly campaign when, like, there's some real money that needs to be raised to help people and give blood and do, you know, all the things that were necessary. And it just was inappropriate for me to be all, you know, superficial and funny and all that stuff at this time.
Right.
And so, you know, our fundraising letter, we were able to stop it. That didn't go out. And eventually we modified it and sent it out. It ended up, you know, just breaking even. But I was on the ballot, you know. I was there. I was at the debates. You know, I debated. And it was an interesting time. I learned a lot and had a lot of fun, you know. And, you know, but just that 9/11 interfering with the momentum of the campaign that I had was much too much to overcome.
So, with
besides,
everything
that I would have been mayor of New York, what the hell would I do? How the hell could I do that?
Yeah.
I pride myself on, like, not having a job. You know, in the debate, they asked me what I would do if I were elected. I said, I guess I'd have to buy a suit and a couple of neckties.
That's crazy. So, while this time passes, do you still keep in touch with Larry, or do you ever hear from the other cast members from Seinfeld?
Yeah, Larry and I keep in touch. We talk on the phone from time to time, and when he had his play on Broadway, he spent the whole summer in New York, and I got to see quite a bit of him. But most of the time, he's either up in Martha's Vineyard or in Pacific Palisades, California. He was coming in to do Bernie Sanders on Saturday Night Live, but he would fly in the afternoon and fly out that night. You know what I mean? So I only got to see him once or twice when he was doing that stuff. But as far as other members of the cast, occasionally I run into Jerry Stiller. Quite friendly with him. And of course Jerry I'm friendly with. Michael I'm friendly with. Well, I wouldn't say that we're friends, but we have a very cordial relationship. You know, Jerry is I really have a lot of respect for Jerry. He's really a good guy. He's a real mensch, you know. And I can't say anything bad about him ever, because he's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael is also a good guy. He's a little confused. He's very, you know, people would think he's an outgoing, fun-loving, but he's really a very shy, introverted. And I just make a point of telling him he's not a racist.
Yeah.
And that whole incident, you know, people don't realize that for 15 minutes before he had his tantrum and said what he said, these people were heckling him unmercifully, you know. You has-been, get the hell off. And Michael, at that point, at the Laugh Factory, he had only been doing stand-up for like 6 months, you know?
Mm.
He was a physical comedian, now he's doing stand-up, and he just did not have the skill set to deal with hecklers, you know? He tried to make it into a joke, but it didn't work, and... And the big mistake was the damage control. Instead of, like, having his publicist say, Michael has gone into rehab, and we wish him well... Yeah, they instead had him going around kissing ass of all these black leaders, you know.
Yeah.
That shows he's not a racist, and I think that was completely the wrong approach. But he's a good guy, he's not a racist, and he'll make a comeback because he's very talented.
So before we go, you have done, you know, you've done so many amazing things through the show, before the show, and you continue to do things, you know, obviously still going on with it. Did you ever imagine in your life that, you know, the success of something else would lead to, like, your character led to a success, and then that led to something that you did? Is it hard to kind of, like, put it all in perspective sometimes? Like, how many little things had to happen to kind of like put you where you are now? And also, what kind of things are you doing now other than the tour?
Well, the tour, my stage show, and I'm working on my memoirs. I have some very funny stories about my life as a comic on the road, and well, many of the acquaintances I've, you know, have been the fortune of working with, and it's coming along pretty good. I think it's going to be a very readable book. And as far as, like, you know, life is funny, like all these little things, to, you know, like, for instance, when I started off as a stand-up comic, the idea was to, like, become famous, because that's what you have to accomplish in order to really have a successful career. You have to become famous. And so, you know, I did stand-up comedy with an eye toward, you know, getting as far ahead as I can. And I made a living, but, you know, I wasn't becoming famous. I was just making a living at it. And then, you know, all of a sudden, Larry David creates this character. And next thing you know, I'm actually famous, not because of my talent, but because I lived across the hall from somebody with talent. So,
yeah.
You know. My partner just came in. She's saying, that's not true.
Well, that's not true. You're special, too.
She says, I have my own talent. I have a domestic partner. I like telling people I have a domestic partner, because when I say that, they think maybe he's gay. Maybe Kramer's gay. He has a partner. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but she is a very beautiful musician. Anyone interested in checking her out? Her name is Marcy Castro. Go to YouTube. You can see how talented she is as a singer, a composer, and a musician. Mm. A great keyboard player. But she doesn't like me being humble. What am I supposed to say? Yeah, I'm famous. I'm kidding. I'm like a D-minus celebrity, you know? Let's face it. But at least I know where I'm at, you know? I have no misconceptions of what it's all about. And, you know, but I am funny. I will say that about myself. My show is really very entertaining. And maybe your listeners. And if any of your listeners are actually listening to this, I want you to, like, send an email to me to tourmail@kennykramer.com and tell me that you heard this on the internet, that you heard this interview. Because, well, I know you guys might be in a garage in Bayonne putting me on with this whole thing, entertaining yourselves, having the real Kramer do an interview for
How
me.
Did you know? It's not a garage, it's an office.
From you guys. And you know, did you call me one time about doing an autograph show?
No, no.
That wasn't you?
No, okay. It wasn't me. I just emailed you.
Okay. That's something else I did for the first time, is autograph shows. I did this show called Chiller. You know what that is?
Yep, the horror and... the horror theme.
I couldn't believe people lined up like a block long to get my autograph. You know?
Oh yeah, Chiller's big in Jersey, twice a year.
Yeah,
I used to go to that one. So let me ask you, Kent.
It was a lot of fun. So anyway, you got the whole story now. What are you gonna do with it?
Well, I guess we'll put it on the air or something eventually.
So how many people actually, do you have any way of telling how many people listen to your show?
Oh, yeah. We get a couple thousand every week.
Really?
Yeah. We do okay.
Is it Seinfeld specific, or do you deal with other things as well?
No, every week we try to just bring on, like, someone with an interesting story, or we've talked to comedians and athletes and artists and rappers and guys who've been attacked by a hippo before. And a lot of people. So it's been a good ride.
Cool, very cool. Have you been able to work your way into getting some actual press credentials?
Actually, yeah, we got into some NASCAR events to do, like, a booth, a couple beer festivals we've done things, we've a couple record labels that we've talked to, they'll send us, like, any new artists they have, they'll ask us to interview them and stuff, so it's fun. We've gotten to talk to some really cool people, Mark Summers, and...
Have you figured out a way to monetize this yet?
A little bit. We've had a couple sponsors. We have a clothing company, a couple craft breweries. So we make enough to just keep the show going, and we just really do it because we love doing it.
Yeah, that's the best thing to do is do what you love doing, and you don't have to work.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Kenny, well, one last.
Well, how are we going to end this thing?
I think Mike's going to end it.
Yeah. I'll end it with one last question. And was there ever a pitch that you threw out there that you thought would be a funny episode that they didn't use?
That they didn't use?
Yeah.
I think most of the stuff I gave Larry, he used. You know, it did. You know, of course, he got a lot of stuff just out of real life.
Yeah.
That he used, but like suggestions I gave him is like, you know, the episode where George is ordering hair growing tonic from China and they don't speak English and he doesn't speak Chinese, but Chinese delivery boy shows up and they put him on the phone and he gets the stuff and it comes and it smells horrible. I mean, you've all seen this countless times. Well, yeah. In real life that happened. I gave that as a suggestion to Larry because that's exactly the way it happened. There's a DVD of the reality tour that I do. It's called Kramer's Reality Tour, and it's available at KennyKramer.com, a shameless plug. But in my DVD as bonus footage, I have the actual video of Larry's bald head that I shot in my living room before video. And then like 3 months later, I did an after video. You can see there were like three little wisps of hair growing in the front of me.
That's awesome.
Kenny, I wanna thank you so much for your time. We had a lot of fun talking and listening about your life and just a fun laid back interview. So we really appreciate it, man. And good luck with whatever you got going on. And thank you for the time.
Okay, and the same to you guys. I wish you guys the best of luck. And of course, if any of your listeners are curious or interested, you go to KennyKramer.com. And or if you're interested in booking my stage show, it's KramerOnSeinfeld.com. And
awesome.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity to let people know about this.
See, that's what I want in my life, Mike. Like, I want you to, like, write a show about a podcast or something like that.
Okay.
And it gets majorly successful, and you just need a character of Scott. And you just kind of, like... tell about the funny, quirky stories that we had in life, and then I'm just able to kind of, you know, do things like kind of on the side, be like, Mike's, this is, I met Mike here, like he talked into this microphone, we communicated on this computer, and we could,
So as long as I do all the hard work,
yes,
you'll get all the other side stuff.
That's exactly what I want.
Okay, I'll get right on that.
It is fascinating how like the universe works, right? Like you're friends with this guy that's a comic or whatever, or write. Yeah, sure. Yeah, everybody's a writer. You know, everybody's a you know, and then all of a sudden he writes arguably the biggest show of all time You know, like, and you're a major influence on that show. Like, you are one of the four characters that literally stirs the straw that stirs the drink. You know what I mean?
So if we were the Seinfeld, who would be the other two with us?
Oof. I don't know. We don't really have any other friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe
I think people would get sick of Doug Match too early.
Maybe we can get like Natty. He's kind of like a Kramer type character, like wild, eccentric, and has puppets and stuff like that. And nobody knows his real name, just like Kramer.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that. That's a good reference.
Yeah. No, we wouldn't do Doug. We've already seen the Jewish thing in many sitcoms. We're done with that. Seinfeld did that. And then as far as like a chick, I don't know.
Hmm.
I mean,
me too.
I don't know. But. I guess I don't
know. We have openings, people.
Yeah, I guess that makes well, me or you, George.
I guess I'd be closer to George than anything.
Oh, man.
I would see George getting leg cramps trying to haul equipment across the field.
George would also get caught talking to himself in the mirror, testing out characters.
Yeah. All right, I'm seeing this. I got my character. All right.
Yeah, and I guess I kind of got to be like the straight man, like Jerry. I kind of be just sarcastic to the other characters and let the other characters.
Nobody likes
it. Yeah, yeah. And let the characters carry the show.
Yeah,
I'm exactly. Okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, all right.
That's fine.
Get on it.
All right.
That'll be next week's episode. Right Hit TV show. Got it.
So we'll do an episode of the podcast within an episode of our new TV show.
Yeah. We'll do like season one where we're, instead of Jerry's stand-up, it'll be the podcast.
That's very Seinfeld of us, a show within a show within a show, because they started, what was interesting about that book, I know I said it a bunch of times, but Seinfeld did things from real life, right? And then real life things happen, and then they put those real life things back into the show. Like Kenny's tour, that started happening after Seinfeld became successful, and then they put that tour back into the show. So it's pretty, there's a lot of like little things like that. It's very interesting. So it's like the fourth wall just kind of keeps getting broken down. You know? But the one and only Kenny Kramer.
Scott, I'm going to a party tonight with Gandy Jones. I don't really know what to do. All he wants to do is talk about his mustache.
Let's interview him twice. All right, Berlew. So before we get out of here, what do you got?
What is the maddest you ever got with somebody doing something sports related?
So, like, in a game or something like that, or...
Yeah, anything like that. Maybe I should set it up by reading this story I heard of today. A man has bitten off another man's finger during a fight at a Massachusetts golf course.
I saw that. I didn't read the story, though, so
yeah.
Good.
A 47-year-old man was arrested at the South Marsh Golf Club in Plymouth on Friday after he apparently got into a fight with another golfer and bit off a part of his thumb. The station reports the victim's thumb was bitten off to his knuckle, and he was transported to a local hospital for treatment. The incident happened around sunset. The alleged attacker was arrested and charged with mayhem.
That's a charge?
That's like the weirdest thing about this. I mean, just seems like an Allstate commercial.
I'm mayhem.
Yeah. I'm mayhem. You're out playing golf. All of a sudden, somebody chops off a bit of your thumb.
Yeah.
You should have had Allstate.
Oops. I accidentally just played the Seinfeld theme song beneath you for a second. It was like, you're mayhem.
You got your thumb bit off. Right off, Jerry.
All right, so he was charged with mayhem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Police, the Badger declined to comment Saturday, and Chief Michael Boteri didn't immediately return a call seeking more information. So a guy bit off somebody's thumb, I guess, because they weren't playing fast enough as the sun was going down.
Now, I'm curious, like, to ask how the thumb got into the mouth. Were they swinging at each other, and then he grabbed the hand and bit the thumb off? Or did he, like, sneak up behind the guy and just, like, on his thumb?
Well, for what I somewhat heard the story on the radio, which made me look it up, apparently, like, two guys were fighting. And the son of one of the guys came over to try to break it up. As he's kind of like putting his hand out to break up stuff, it kind of went near the guy's mouth and the guy just chomped down. And from what they said in the other article, it sounded like somebody chomping into a Dorito.
Oh, nice. Definitely. I feel like the hand had to be near the face and then the chomp happened. I will tell you, I've been around, like, you know, about around sports a lot, on both sides of the game as a player and a coach, and people are insane. Players are insane. Parents have taken things to new levels. People will fight. Soccer coach buddy of mine sent me a video the other day. They were at a tournament in the Poconos, like 8 to 10-year-olds, and a woman ran onto the field and punched the ref in the face. Literally punched the ref right in the face over God knows what, a call or non-call or something. I remember playing soccer in high school. I think this was my sophomore year. I was it was a county game, and I was invited to come kind of sit on the bench for the county game. And we had one kid. He always had a screw loose. Take off a cleat and try to hit another kid with a cleat, where the point where they got into a fight, and the police actually had to come and escort us off the field because the fans were literally going crazy. And one of the kid's brothers ran down, like he was like in college, ran down onto the field and like started fighting with one of the other teams. Insane. And I think that was our fault too, because I remember the kid spit on someone, like, which is like,
oh,
that can throw anybody into rage.
Yeah.
So that was insane. I'm trying to think of what other things that have happened. On the coaching side, I was coaching a freshman soccer game, and I had two referees tell me at halftime, hey, you got to go over and talk to the parents. They're just being too crazy. Now, the setting of a freshman soccer game is like 11 parents in the stand, like being like, go, like, woo, you know, like, and being like, bad call, ref, like the equivalent of like that. So I'm like, okay. And then about 10 minutes into the second half, they blow the whistle and the two of them walk off the field and get in their cars and leave. Leave the game. So my team's on one side, the other team's on this, and it was like a chippy game already. So they start pushing and shoving each other. I lose it, and I start running towards the refs, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, why? What are you kidding me? Like, you're leaving the game? Like, that's not even a thing. Like,
yeah.
So I was losing it. The other coach was trying to calm his kids down. I was trying to get my kids, like, away, and there was, like, fights breaking. The parents were going nuts, yelling at this. It was mayhem. Mayhem.
Mm. Yeah.
They should have been charged with mayhem.
I've had two times. I didn't get into a fight, but it came pretty close. I was playing softball with the company team.
The IT softball league, as opposed to the IT soccer.
Yeah. The second story will be an IT soccer team.
Oh, good.
I know, but the softball team. So I'm playing catcher, and guy barely hits another, and it kind of went backwards and then forwards or something. It was a weird little roll or whatever, and the ump didn't immediately call a foul ball. So there was kind of a delay. So I sprint up, the guy's sprinting to run to first. As I grab the ball, he flings his bat, and it goes right into my shit. Mm. And I am, it is pain level to the extreme. I'm limping around, I'm furious and all that, and I turned to the guy, and he seems shocked by this, and I'm just in a really pissed off mood, and I just remember screaming, I'm effing okay, thanks for asking, and I grabbed his bat and like threw it to the other side.
Yeah.
So later in the game, I'm like running the bases, I'm trying to stretch, guy hits a single, I'm trying to stretch from second to third, and as they throw the ball, like the third baseman kind of gets in the way, so I kind of sidesteps, and we touch like shoulders, nothing like crazy or whatever, and he tags me out, and I go up to him, hey, sorry, and he didn't blink an eye to it, and I'm walking back to the dugout, and like somebody from the outfield goes, oh, it's okay to come after one of our guys and all, and I lost a nerve and all, and I just grabbed the bat and I started walking out to the field. I'm like, why don't you say something to my fucking face?
Wow.
And they're all just like quiet as hell and all. I'm like, come on. And like some guys have known me for like 5 or 6 years. It's like, dude, I didn't know you had that switch in you.
So you were like Roger Clemens Piazza.
I was pretty close because it was, I mean, you know, better heads prevailed in that whole scenario, but nothing happened off of that. But that was a pretty bad moment there. And then during our C3I IT soccer team.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hopefully one day we'll be putting a sketch together on that. I would like to. Yeah. But anyway.
Yes. So for people who are new to the show, I used to work for a company and we had a soccer team and we were literally the world's worst soccer team to ever exist in every category whatsoever. where we average a 20-goal loss. And when I say average, that means some days we were good and we only lost by 15, and some days we were really bad and we lost by 30-something. So we were in one of them games, and all, I think we're down like 15 or whatever. It's like when we give up, like I'm on defense, but I'm just creeping up because it's like to the point, all right, we can steal a goal, whatever. It doesn't matter, whatever. So all the action's happening, and it's one of those balls that kind of goes in the middle of the field where two people are like 20 feet away from it. So, you know, it's two people sprinting to it. Whoever gets to it, gets to it. And I just ran straight for the ball, and so did the other guy. And then we just happened to collide with each other. And I'm about 220. I'm going to guesstimate the guy was like 170, whatever. So he plows into me. He flips over, whatever, and I stay up. I didn't mean to him or whatever. And I actually got a yellow card for that.
Ooh.
And I felt bad for it. Then all of a sudden, the guy was talking trash. And he's like, oh, you want to try it again? Let me see you do that. And he kept going and going. At one point, I was right next to him. I said, I wasn't even trying. If you want me to fucking try, do something, little boy. And then I didn't hear from him again.
You're like the bad dude in like in those movies. Like you're like the enforcer.
Yeah. I would say I'm kind of like, remember the black chick in Police Academy where she was all soft-spoken?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden at the end of the movie, he's like, dog bag! It's like that.
I like that. That's the first comparison you made. Like you weren't like I'm like Liam Neeson in Taken. Like I'm badass. You said you're the black girl from Police Academy.
In the Police Academy movies.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that one makes more sense than Taken. I gotta be honest. I compared the two movies. I said that one's me.
Yeah, I played in an adult basketball league. It was a while back now, maybe 8 years ago, something like that. And it was in like one season it was in Newark, one season was Clifton. So it was a pretty, there were some pretty good teams, and like you know, there was an urban area, so like it got pretty intense sometimes. So we're playing a team that's I would say mostly like Spanish guys, Spanish players, and my friend, who I just threw a bachelor party for, he's a bit of a hothead. Like he flies off the handle at anything. He got like a hard foul or something going in the paint, and he just erupts and they starts this fight. Like they're pushing and shoving, and literally people started coming out of the stands. They had like fans with them, came out of the stands, and it just erupts into like this fight. I'm trying to separate that, and somewhere along the line, someone hit him. They had to hit him with something, because all of a sudden I look back and he's just like pouring blood all over his face, like, and like someone definitely had. So I grabbed him, and I like the guys are like pushing me and pushing other guys. I'm trying not to be involved. I'm like trying to separate everyone. I like grab my friend. He's like screaming and yelling. I just drag him into the locker room and like lock the locker room door. And like his head was like cut open, and he's screaming and yelling, and like the police had to come to get them out of there first before we left. That was pretty insane. I myself have gotten into a million like shoving matches and soccer games and stuff like that, but nothing crazy. I was more of like I played really hard and kind of kept my mouth shut. Like But I've seen so many sports. I spent people watching sports, like fans in the audience, just nuts. So many fights, hockey games, football games. You know, you see the whole section stand up and like, oh, there's a fight. You know, that's kind of pretty common. But yeah, people lose their minds when it comes to sports. But
yeah.
I think it's time to segue out of here. We've had a nice long episode tonight. So So Berlo, next time we do an episode, you will be a married man.
Well, if you want to get technical, by the time this is out, I've been married for like a week or something, so...
Well, yes, but by the next time we do an episode, you'll be married.
Yeah, that's true. So, we pre-tape these, so singles ladies, don't come up to me for one last resort. I know you want to, but, you know, I'll be official by then. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, like, what do you do now to manage, like, the hundreds and... like thousands of emails that come in every week, like, hey, like we really like that Mike guy. Like, what do you do now to kind of deflect that or hide that?
I go, well, that's so sweet of you, and I explain my situation, and sometimes they're mature about it and they accept it. You know, sometimes they come back and beg, and I'm just like, you know, that's what happens.
Now, do you have, like, I should send you some of the shirts, so maybe you could do autographs, sign the shirt, and send it out to some fans. Because I never seem to get any of those emails. Like, I never get, like, hey,
Scott, I don't understand why.
Scott's so sexy. Like, he's a sexy host. Like, we like him. It's always like, where's the Burles? Who's that Burles guy? Like, who's that guy that calls himself the Burles? We want to go to his Burles cave and just swing the mace and have him put on that Phillies
tonight on
scarf.
The Burles game.
Put on that scarf and just have his way with me. That's all I ever get. I never get emails like, hey, great show tonight. Just always Burlew fan mail.
Sadly, all those letters are from Dom Bagnano. It's just so weird how he just keeps on sending them to
me. Well, he's a weird dude. But
he is.
I think it's time to get down out of here. Good luck with the wedding on Monday. Not Monday.
Thank you, sir.
Well, whenever you come back. I wish we could be there. So I guess with that, anything to promote?
I will promote the VCR Kids. Jane
VCR
Aaron,
Kids?
Adults. Yes, a podcast who are helping us out. We're going to promote them. Jay and Aaron are adults who review kids' movies from the past. Every week they see if their childhood movies are enjoyable as they remember. From Harriet the Spy to the Space Jam to the Mighty Ducks and more, check out the VCR Kids on iTunes, Stitcher, or any other podcast platform.
All right. And I guess I will just promote, I'm trying to think of when this will be up and if it makes sense. You know what? In that case, I don't know when this will be up exactly for the show, so I'm just going to promote Tap House 15 in general. We do our comedy shows there the last Thursday of every month. This one will be up right after next week's show. But we do last Thursday of every month. It's absolutely free to come to at a minimum. But not just for the comedy shows. You should go there and have their food and their ridiculous beer list. So those are my friends at Tap House 15 in Jefferson. Just a great restaurant to go to. And that's it. So I guess with that, guys, life is funny. And laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. And Burlew, go get married with your mace.
Yep. Head into the cave.
Oh, and if anybody has suggestions for Burlew's man cave names, we need some better names, please send them on over. With that, follow us. Adios, guys.